Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
No, Rick Pearson. Oh no! Don't worry, everyone. He's absolutely fine. He's just not here. lazy. So, Jane, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Sun is shining.
I know. Life is kind of normal again.
Yeah.
Does it feel normal again? I don't know.
Yeah, I saw my parents at the weekend. I haven't seen them since August. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, I saw some friends IRL in the flesh, and it was weird. Like, oh, I haven't seen you in a year and a half. What's new with you? Like, just kind of crazy, but not complaining. Long may it stay that we can see people in real life.
You'd think we'd have more to talk about, but...
You would, yeah. But we've all just been indoors. Yeah. You know, there's not much to update each other on, is there?
Did you talk about running? Did you get into that at all?
I didn't. I did have a moment where we were talking about someone we know, we definitely still know her, who's doing a like transformation. Ooh. And I kind of said, you know, 4 drinks in, oh, I wish I had something to train for. And then I woke up the next day and thought, actually, I don't.
So,
I really don't wish I had anything to train for if this is how I feel after a drink and I have to go for a run.
Has it? Has your stance changed then on having a race to do? Do you feel less like you want to do one?
Well, I feel now that the weather is good, I'm excited for the London Triathlon and I'm gonna go for that. I'm gonna put all of my energy into kind of actually training for it and not just turning up on the day, winging it. So I need to get swimming, but hopefully I will. Yeah, maybe go to the sea this weekend and do some real open water swimming.
Nice. From 0 to 100 straight away.
Yeah, literally, like hoping that my school swimming comes in handy. About 15 years later.
You're quite a handy swimmer though, aren't you? I just want to, yeah, in case anyone listening gets worried about your safety.
Being swept out to sea. Yeah, I am. I am quite, to be honest, it's the cycle that I'm probably most concerned about. I think I can, I swam a lot as a child and a teenager and running came second. So I don't feel that nervous about the swim, but I did a lot, nearly all of my swimming in a pool, and I know that London Triathlon isn't going to have a crazy current, but there is going to be some, isn't there? I'm going to need to be used to swimming not in a pool, I think.
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times, and that's the swim is my least favourite bit.
I've also only got like a winter wetsuit, and I feel like we're almost at the stage where that might be too hot, but then I am a cold person, so... I'll report back. I'll let you all know how my wetsuit is.
My first triathlon I ever did many years ago, I wore just a surfing wetsuit. Absolute disaster. So there's a hot tip for
nice.
You. Yeah, don't do that. But anyway, how's your running?
Yeah, okay. I haven't had the most enjoyable week. I like to break the mold and just, you know, go out and do my long run on a Thursday because I'm a big believer that long runs don't have to be on a Sunday. And I just hated it. It was like one of those days that I'm sure we're all living through at the moment where it's like quite warm now. It's probably about 15 degrees now, but it's about 3 in the morning. So yeah. I went out in like shorts and like a kind of I don't know, like a Tracksmith training top, not thick by any means. And I was absolutely freezing. And I was just like, you know, when you look at my splits afterwards, it's dramatically different each mile. And I spoke to my coach afterwards and he shared a wonderful nugget that it's an effort and your body doesn't know that your watch, you know, is recording 1 mile at this minute mile and the next at that, and that you still banked that work still in your legs. And it did make me feel a lot better. So I'm going to share that for anyone who's done a run today and thought, God, what is going on? Why can I do 1 mile at this pace and the next mile I can't hold it at all?
So that's quite nice, sort of a, like a running robot. Your legs are just just computing. I have done distance and that's it.
Yeah.
And your brain's going, ah, oh, God, the struggle.
What about you? How's your running going?
Yeah, good. Like, I'm not, I mean, you, how far did you run?
That was 11 miles.
Yeah, I'm not nowhere near that at the moment. But I'm still sort of running without a watch and not looking at looking at my pace. And yeah, I came back and on this one, I did have a watch on because it was, I was testing something. I can't remember what it was. But I looked at it afterwards and just was like, oh, yeah, that felt all right, actually. You know, it was quite a nice, pleasant surprise. It's quite nice having that sort of, that felt good as I was doing it. And then the watch backed it up. So it was, yeah, it was good. It was only like 5-6K, but it was a good run. I liked it. The sun's out though, so it's all of that.
Yeah, it all feels better when the sun is out. I think Beth Potter said this a few weeks ago that actually, if you do look at your, like when I was looking at my watch and I could see that my pace had dramatically dropped, a part of your brain's like, oh, can't be bothered, let's just get this over with. Whereas if you don't know, then you never give up on a session because your brain, like your body, my body wouldn't have dramatically felt that different between mile on mile. So I think running without the watch is maybe the way to go, but I'm still too much of a control freak to let go.
I mean, Rick's not here right now, so we could just make up some stuff about his running.
Yeah, I reckon Rick's getting gradually back into running after doing a 50-mile race, and he's still beating himself up for not going sub 8 hours or whatever the ridiculous target was.
Definitely was that.
And I think he's been doing some really gentle miles, probably running from tree to tree or barefoot or something really on brand for Rick. That's Rick's running without speaking to him. That's what I would predict.
I think he's completely backtracked on his previous statement of just trying shorter distances now, and he's actually signed up for a mountain marathon.
Yeah, or classic Rick.
Possibly the UTMB. And I think,
yeah,
I think that's now to be confirmed, but I think Rick is officially in the UTMB. So more on that as the news breaks. But well, we should speak to our guest of the week, I think.
Yeah, we should. Guest of the week. On the phone, could be an
athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Our guest this week has worked in some of the world's best restaurants, but he left the world of fine dining behind to run and cook with some of the planet's greatest trail runners. He's baked banana bread with Ricky Lightfoot in the Lake District and made compote with Emily Forsberg in Norway, and he's written about it in his book Eat, Run and Enjoy. Hungry to know more, we've invited him onto the podcast to talk all things nutrition. So Billy, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Can you give us a quick summary then of your life as a chef and also how you got into trail running in the first place?
I started cooking straight from school many, many years ago, 20 something years ago now. And sort of got hooked into the restaurant world and the world of chefing, and that sort of I carried on. I was really fortunate to work in some of the really good restaurants around the world, and I was really stuck sort of almost addictively into this fine dining restaurant world, which took me from York, where I'm from originally, up to Newcastle and London, and then eventually here to Stockholm in Sweden, where I've been for the last 10 years. And I guess just after I moved here, sort of the trails and the nature around here sort of inspired me to get outdoors a little bit more, which turned to be sort of a new addiction, which was sort of trail running and getting outdoors as much as possible.
we always like when people have these sort of interests that combine. So yours is food and particularly the preparation of food and trail running and the high intensity world of a busy kitchen. Do you draw similarities? Can you see the attraction and why one attracted you to the other, or are they totally different?
I think there definitely is. There's definitely some sort of sadomasochist kind of quality to it. You have these long days in the kitchen, and it's a lot about, okay, I did 8, 10 days in a row, 12-hour day or 15-hour days or whatever, and you're exhausted, you can barely stand up. And then it's pretty good training for ultra running, I have to say. It's different. Recovery is difficult, and that's the same sort of, if you do too many long days in the kitchen, you're exhausted. But it's a really good base. I don't have an athletic base at all. When I moved here from London, I was sort of 15 kilos heavier. I'd only just recently stopped smoking and had a rather unhealthy diet of Guinness. And yeah, Guinness and cigarettes was my fuel back then, unfortunately. But I think those long days in the kitchen was really, really helpful in the long term when it comes to sort of endurance training.
There are quite a few chefs, aren't there, that are run? Is it Michelle Roux?
He's
a runner.
Yeah, that's true.
Gordon Ramsay, like there are quite a few, aren't there? I wonder do you think that's why?
I think so. I think there's a really high, not really high, but quite a lot of people who run Marathon de Sable as well are chefs. There's a few like fairly well-known chefs that have run that race. I guess that's sort of the kind of one of the most commercially prestigious ultra races, I suppose. And chefs do a little bit of, there's always rumours that chefs are a little bit ego-driven. So I guess Marathon de Sable works well for that.
I think it's being in a hot kitchen and time on feet. I think that you're set. Yeah. Standing up in a desert is easy if you've been spent on service for however many hours and it's next to a hot oven. It sounds like the same thing.
Yeah. Do you wear like Crocs? You wearing the Crocs in your kitchen? Does that prepare your feet for hours on the feet?
No, I don't know. I wear it's Birkenstock slippers. It's kind of slippers, which a bit like Crocs. They would be terrible for ultra running. Marathon de Sable in a pair of those, I think would.
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it. It's your next challenge.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. Yeah, that'd be good. So Billy, let's talk a bit about your book then. So Eat, Run, Enjoy. What motivated you to write this book?
Well, I was writing a sort of blog for a Swedish website, Trail Run in Sweden, with sort of race reports and some recipes here and there, a sort of link to pre-race meals or post-recovery meals or just general training. So it felt like sort of a natural step up from the blog to start writing some recipes or writing a book with food and running as the theme.
It's cool though, because you went around and kind of, you weren't just writing about food, you were also meeting some of the most amazing trail runners on the planet. We talked a little bit in the intro, Ricky Lightfoot, Emily Forsberg, some guys over in the US. Were there any like sort of unifying themes when you talk to these people about food and you were like, okay, lots of top trail runners think this about food, or their attitudes are kind of similar in some way?
I think one thing that was quite interesting was that one similarity was that they weren't, you can't say they weren't that bothered, but they weren't so dogmatic in their approach. They weren't counting calories. They weren't talking about X amount of carbs per hour, or they just sort of ate well consistently. I think some ate more. Courtney in America, it would be a push to say that she ate well all the time, because she sort of advertised the fact that she just eats sweets and drinks loads of beer, but generally she ate reasonably well. And Emily Forsberg and Ida Nilsson, Mimi Kotka, the Swedish runners, they are really into it. They have their own sort of nutrition brands, so they were really into it. But it was more from a sort of holistic eat well every day rather than eat X amount of carbohydrates four times a day perspective, which was quite refreshing, I think, actually.
Food in the ultra scene especially is there's a real sort of danger of it becoming just fuel centric, as in everyone just eats to just get round or just to do the miles, and I kind of, it sucks all the joy out of food. I think that there's a real divide in running, possibly, that people are like either all in for running and it's to counteract their diet, or they're in just like they're eating food is just an inconvenience that gets in the way of running. I think that's kind of like where the that's what I've seen as the sort of the two sides of the running diet sort of stuff.
I'm definitely the second one, aren't I? But like anyone who's sat next to me for any amount of time will know I eat like, I make pizzas out of rice cakes, Billy. Like, if you want that for your book, hit me up because it's a great recipe.
We have an ongoing joke that Nutrition with Jane would probably be the worst food blog in the world.
Is that why you've included enjoy in your book title? Do you think that that's something that's missing? Like, I don't really enjoy food. Do you think it's missing from a lot of runners' diets?
I think it is, or it's certainly missing when you read about sort of nutrition and running. There's very little focus on, if you read about diets, they often focus on what you can't eat rather than what you can eat. And if you focus on nutrition, it's about weighing things and thinking about how many I can't grasp how people, I can understand how many gels they need to eat per hour for X amount of carbs. Like, it's completely beyond me. I can understand that if you run in a race, you need to get in calories. It's not, the enjoyment can wait until afterwards, potentially.
I'd like to know then, Billy, out of all the people that you cooked with, who was the best chef? Were any of them really, really good cooks?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ida Nielsen was trained to be a chef, so she is good. She worked on the west coast of Sweden in some fish restaurants back in the day when she came back from her scholarship of running in the US 20 years ago. So she is a really good cook. And Emily trained to be a baker. Mimi Kocker is also a new dietitian. So they were really, really into food.
Who was the worst? Go on, who was the worst?
I mean, Courtney said she said that she's never cooked anything in her life. She doesn't cook ever. Her husband cooks for her, and she eats. I mean, she has big, big bowls of candy on every flat surface in her house, basically. Like, yeah, she had two big fridges. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but she had two big fridges. And one of them I tried to look in to I thought that I'd left some salad in there, but it was in the other fridge. But you open the door and it was just jam packed. I've never seen so much beer in one fridge in my life.
So this is Courtney Dalwater, isn't it, who won the UTMB in 2019 and set other various records, one of the greatest female trail runners in the world. So that's interesting.
Amazing runner and such a really, really fun person. Like, we met in a brewery in Golden, Colorado, where we went for a run and then we went to the brewery afterwards for a few beers. And so she takes her carb loading quite seriously.
Yeah, I mean, do what you want, Courtney. Like, you know, she's got the wins to back it up.
That's amazing. Well, apart from let's move away from like the Courtney Dalwater approach. What would be your like go to pre race meal, say the night before, like like a run, either like a long run or a race, what are you going to eat?
I mean, if it, race-wise, I'll probably start thinking about it a couple of days before. So rather than really bulking up,
okay, yeah,
the evening before, then it's always sort of whole foods, real long, how do you say, long burning carbohydrates, whole grains, meat, but maybe if I'm eating meat, not so much of a little bit of fish, but plenty of vegetables, nothing too spicy or nothing that I'm unfamiliar with, because you don't want to. If the race is away from home or you're traveling, then often it's like a pizzeria. You know that if you get in a, it's not ideal the night before, but you know that if you've put in the hard work the days leading up to the race, the evening before, it's better to have something that you know is not going to cause you any trouble if you're staying in a hotel or a bed and breakfast the night before. So keep it simple, but thinking about it more in a lead up rather than like the carb load in the night before.
Yeah, I'm also celiac, just to add to the joy that is my diet. So I don't trust anything or anyone.
I think that's wise potentially with as a celiac.
Jane, you travel with porridge, don't you?
Yeah, I also told, I think I've said on the podcast before, I took my own cutlery and my own bowl. Like, I'm a lunatic. I don't know why. Why do I do these things? Why do I ever leave the house?
It's quality, that. Well, what about on the morning then? What would you eat, like, you know, 2 or 3 hours before the actual race?
I get like porridge probably, or I don't know, muesli, a little bit of fruit. Boiled egg, some nothing too much. Maybe a juice, or it depends. Like, I'm from Yorkshire, I drink Yorkshire tea, and I'll probably have a boiled egg and a slice of toast, or maybe a banana an hour before, or nothing too out of this world. More just with a little bit of thought. I know that that's not going to give me any stomach upset or give me any trouble before, and the hard work of the sort of nutrition is already done.
You should definitely hang out with Rick a bit more before races, or especially during races. Rick has a tendency to go completely off script with absolutely no foresight into what might happen. He also used to make his own gels. Well, there's the best. We've got a couple of stories here, which I'll go through very quickly. The first one was that Rick once baked sweet potato and carried that around with him for a whole marathon. So he had sweet potato in tin foil in his pocket for a marathon, which didn't go well.
Didn't work that way.
He liked to make his own gels for a while.
That was successful.
Relatively. For his first 100-mile ultra, he decided to eat nothing but dates for the first like 20 miles, which meant he just...
Oh my God, how did that...
Yeah, badly. Yeah, imagine immediately what you'd think would happen, and it definitely happened.
Yeah.
And it's only... He ran the South Downs 50 yesterday. No, Saturday.
I was fueling with some Swedish product, actually, mainly.
Yeah, but this was the Rick's first race where he actually did it properly.
Yeah, I was using some of the Morton product, which is almost feels like the sort of food of the future. That we're going to be eating that in like 80 years when we've run out of all natural resources. It will just be sort of gloopy Morton. I mean, it's a good point that Ben makes, though. It's like, did anyone that you meet, you know, because you were meeting like really successful runners, are any of them subscribing to what might be, let's leave Courtney Dowater out of this for now, but what would be like sort of very eccentric diets? Or actually, was it all pretty mainstream when you broke it down?
I think it was pretty mainstream. There was we talked a little bit, especially like Mimi Kotka. She was a nutritionist by like career, and we talked a little bit about like high fat and low carb and statistic. She was talking a lot about the statistics of sort of female runners and undernourished female runners, and how potentially it could, in her opinion, could potentially be dangerous with high fat, low carb, especially for women, which was quite interesting to hear. But we never met anybody that had sort of really, really strong opinions on specific diets. It was very much sort of common sense, but a lot of sort of good, high quality vegetables and no shortcuts.
Well, you talked about not knowing how much calorie, you know, how many certain grams of carbohydrate that everyone should be having per hour in a race and stuff like that. As a runner, when you first started and you were, you know, taking your what you knew about food and things like that, and were you a gel? Did you have gels in races, or did you try and do what Rick did and experiment a bit, or were you did you sort of just stick to sort of not really doing any of it?
I mean, we tried. At the first long run, I did a marathon, and I didn't really know what I was doing. I sort of plodded around, and then after that, I ran the coast to coast. Not in a race, but with my best friend, we did like 7 marathons in 7 days. And that was sort of a baptism of fire when it came to nutrition. His wife was meeting us at lunchtime and dinner time every day. And she would, the first couple of days was bags of crisps and sausage rolls. And that sort of progressed to being salads and a little bit more lighter, a little bit more sort of common sense that, after you sat down and had 3 sausage rolls and a bag of crisps at lunch, you weren't so keen to do the remaining running of the day. But after a salad and sort of something a little bit lighter towards the end of the week, it felt better.
Yeah, definitely. I think race nutrition is such a sort of strange... I think it's the education side of it, really, which is, you know, people understanding how your body stores energy as well and how much energy you have in your body to begin with. So as you say if you build up to a race for a couple of days, your body's pretty, you know, chocker with energy, your muscles are full of glycogen, and you're pretty good. So I just sort of, yeah, it's quite interesting from your point of view as a chef, and then food being a thing of enjoyment, how that sort of translates into like the very formulaic side of approaching a race.
And I think racing is a different thing. It's a, when I race, I take gels. There's nothing, it works for me. They're boring. I sometimes struggle to get them down, but it's a bit more like clockwork. You know that a couple of times an hour you have to force some gloopy substance down, and then you know that you're not going to bonk. That's the, and then if it gets a little bit longer, if it like up to, I don't know, beyond sort of 50k, then at some point you need to eat something real, I guess.
No, I think a lot of nutrition, I think, is it's almost an area that gets overcomplicated by people. I think actually most people generally know sort of 90% of what they need to know of nutrition, and then we just get, kind of get slightly ambushed with these trendy, faddish diets, and suddenly, you know, people are saying, "Oh, you don't need carbohydrate at all. Actually, we're going to run completely on fat and all the rest." And actually, I think most of that stuff is, you know, isn't really grounded on lots of evidence. And the idea that, yeah, what we should really be doing is having quite a lot of carbohydrate, eating a varied diet, lots of fruit and veg, you know, that's going to get you most of the way there. And it's not particularly trendy or exciting, but it's probably true.
I think, I train quite often in the early mornings before I've had any breakfast, so purposely to sort of lower the glycogen levels and try and sort of run on empty a little bit, especially when training for ultra, like long distance, really long distances, because you know that you will have some deficiencies at some point, so to become efficient. But that, I mean, that's not a very scientific approach how I've taken it, but it works for me. If I need to get to work, which is 10k from home, I'm not going to get up in time to eat and comfortably be able to get. So I'm not going to get up 2 hours before I need to leave.
I quite like a fasted run. It kicks off the day.
I never eat before I run. I actually can't bear it.
But you would if it was like a really long run though, Jane, right? No.
If it was like a marathon, but then like a half marathon, I probably wouldn't eat before actually.
Wow.
I hate the feeling of food in my stomach when I run. But maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm a...
No, I there's a definitely like a turning point where you've had, you know, if you've not got enough time beforehand, and I'm talking like 3 hours, 4 hours, something like that, then yeah, I would maybe have a banana. What a lovely chat everyone's getting exposed to. Just finding out when I would or would not eat a banana. Welcome to the podcast.
Billy, what are your running plans this year? Have you got anything in the diary?
I've been sort of suffering a little bit with the problem with my Achilles for the last sort of 6 months. So I had a spot for it. There's a World Heritage site in the northeast of Sweden called the Höga Kusten, the High Coast Trail. And that was a 130-kilometer trail going north to south along the coast. Really, wow. Really beautiful. And I just gave up my spot in that in June. So I'm sort of thinking about basically about recovery and taking it as easy as possible. Maybe do some sort of fast packing or slow packing,
whatever the heel
and Achilles allows me to do. But and with races at the moment, it's so difficult to know what will be going ahead and what won't be.
Do you eat differently when you're recovering? I think that's something that is quite overlooked, isn't it? That you actually need different things when your body's trying to heal.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just that, I mean, it's a recovery from an injury, and I think recovery from general wear and tear when you're running. I mean, it's not too dissimilar. So I think it's a sort of being a little bit mindful of not eating too much junk, and at the same time, so it's not too different from day to day. But then also, like, mentally, if you're struggling a little bit with injury, I think you need to have a bit of a blowout and eat some crap
once in a while
also, because it's too much focus, like trying to be good.
And
sometimes you need to treat yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Depending on your relationship with food, and that balance between like energy in and energy out becomes a real kind of like stress point for people. And I think you're right. Yeah. Like it just needs to be like, okay, I'm just getting better now. I've just got to treat myself like I'm getting better and I not worry about it so much.
Yeah, I think it's hard. It's a hard, being injured is horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rubbish. Well, hopefully you'll be recovering soberly, but thanks so much for your time. Thanks for speaking to us. And yeah, I encourage everyone to get hold of a copy of your new book if they're interested in trail running and food. And if they're listening to this, they've got to be, haven't they? Eat, Run, Enjoy. And it's out now, Billy, isn't it? So people can get hold of it.
It's out now. Anywhere. I saw someone said a lovely quote the other day that you should get it. Whatever bookshop you'd like to close down the least is where you should buy it from. So
that is good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks again for your time. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Thank you very much to our guest, Billy White, and of course to you for listening. You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runner's World Podcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK and click subscribe. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.